Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Kate Loving-Shank, and Joan Adams and I host the show. Our topic this evening is major depression. Our friend Joel disappeared for 15 years, and no matter what kind of clue we tried to uncover about his disappearance, we could not find one single trace of him. Mutual friends were internet dinosaurs, so they were ungoogleable. Joel himself is a self-proclaimed internet dinosaur, so he, too, was untraceable. Joel's sister changed her name, and friends in San Francisco did not return my letters. All I could do was surrender and wait. One day, Joel resurfaced after being institutionalized for 15 years for major depression. Since his release, he has gotten back to a joy of living, and now he feels connected again. So we will discuss major depression and what it felt like from Joel's perspective. However, I am giving you all advance notice. We will laugh. This interview will not be a somber event. When we leave behind the suffering and trouble of the past, as Joel has, a serious line of questioning does not fit in and is in itself laughable. Listen to those inner nudges to change direction and let us learn from Joel and see how he did it. The call-in number is 709. No, it isn't. It's 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Joan Adams. Hello, dear Joan.
Hello, Kate, and how exciting to have Joel on. After
all
these years, that's amazing.
It truly is.
He has to feel like Rip Van Winkle.
Okay, let's bring on our dear friend Joel. Hello, Joel.
Hello, Kate.
Hello, Joel.
Oh, This is Joan, Joel.
Yes, hello, Joan.
How are you this evening?
Oh, very well. It's autumn in New Jersey, and I'm in my room, and I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Well, I guess we're not, it's the kind of thing where I've been talking about you on various blogging posts and so forth. And I just can't believe it. I just cannot believe, that you are with us. And I always, every day, feel so grateful that you are. I mean, go ahead.
No, maybe it's Van Winkle, maybe it's Lazarus.
Lazarus, that's another good one.
So, we could probably think of several of those, huh? That's hysterical.
Anyway,
Lazarus did rise from the dead.
Well, so am I.
And so did the Phoenix.
Well, Joel, you do feel better. I know that you do. And
much
better. I want to know, what is it that, what was it like being institutionalized?
Oh, it was not very pleasant. It was frightening. It was scary. It was. I thought I'd never get out of it. I had never. You knew me for a long time. I had not suffered from clinical depression. It was the first time for me. I was 53 years old, and I can go on and on with my circumstances if you'd like.
You may say whatever you wish. Please do.
Well, I was living in Berkeley, California, and just one evening, I was working as a drama therapist, by the way. I have a master's degree, a couple of master's degrees, but one of my master's degrees was in psychology with a concentration in drama therapy. And just one evening, I just woke in a panic. I didn't know how I was. I couldn't fall back to sleep. You know, insomnia, it's horrible. And thoughts were racing through my head. How am I going to pay my bills? How was I going to continue to work? What's going to happen to me? My partner, I had a partner of 12 years. He's going to be dying of AIDS soon. So I was very overwhelmed. And it was, it's been a tough road. And everybody goes through it in a different way, and I feel blessed to be out of it. How did I get out of it? Well,
yeah.
With a lot of support from my family, my friends, your brother included, for example, and mostly my sister, who, by the way, I don't think she, I don't know where you got the idea she changed her name, but maybe she did. I didn't know about that.
I don't know. That's what
Jala
told me. Go ahead.
I don't know, but anyway, a lot of support, very good psychotherapist who I have now, who looks at issues in my life, and I feel very blessed in having him as a psychotherapist. And also, I could mention a very good psychiatrist who treated me while I was in the last hospital, and now I see her every 2 months or so, and she treats me. A lot of psychiatrists, I don't know if you know, they treat their patients like with a diagnosis. They don't see them as human beings. But I'll mention her name, Dr. Liebhauser, wonderful woman. She listens, she cares. So I feel very blessed, Kate, and I'm doing a lot of things. I'm involved with my, I belong to the UU congregation here in Montclair. I'm Jewish, but I feel at home there, you know. And I recently can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I recently acted in a play, a crazy play called The Dining Room. And I played an old man who's telling his son exactly how he wants his funeral to go. And it was a blast, and I had a great time. A year and a half ago, I could never have done it. I could never be doing the things that I couldn't be talking to you to a year and a half ago.
I know, this is so exciting.
That's amazing too, isn't it?
It's amazing, yes. And I attribute it to, I don't know, maybe a miracle, maybe luck, maybe all the people in my life who cared for me. But I couldn't speak to, I had a friend, I used to teach at Fairleigh Dickinson in Rutherford, New Jersey. And I had a friend, he called me up one night, and when I was living with my sister, and I told my sister to tell him I'm not here. So he thought I was dead, too.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Can I read a quote from a beautiful book by Andrew Solomon that I recommend to people on depression?
Sure.
Yes, please.
It's called The Noonday Demon, An Atlas of Depression. And I very much related to it. He says, the opposite of depression is not happiness, but vitality. I have discovered what I would call a soul. It's a precious discovery. I hate this depressed feeling, but I know they have driven me to look deeper at life, to find and cling to reasons for living. Every day I choose, sometimes gamely, and sometimes against the moment's reason, to be alive, is that not a rare joy?
Wonderful.
That's from his book, The Noonday Demon, An Atlas of Depression. And I'll recommend two other great books. I started a book club with a couple of other people from my church, from my congregation. And we just finished reading a great book on depression, William Styron's Darkness Visible. William Styron wrote Sophie's Choice, you know. Well, he suffered from the memoir of he suffered from deep depression, and he got out of it. Beautiful book, short book, and I highly recommend it to people. Another book that I recommend, another brilliant book, brilliantly written, get this one. It's called An Unquiet Mind. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's by Dr. K. Redfield Jameson, who suffers from manic depression. And it says in the back, professor of psychiatry at the Johns Hopkins Board School of Medicine and co-author of the standard medical text, Dr. K. Redfield Jameson is one of the foremost authorities on manic depressive illness. She has also experienced it firsthand. But even while she was pursuing her career in academic medicine, Jameson found herself succumbing to the same exhilarating highs and catastrophic depressions that affected many of her patients. As the disorder launched her into a ruinous spending spree, episodes of violence, and an attempted suicide. And the way, it's a beautiful book, and the way she emerges from her manic depression is by taking lithium.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that reminds me, when you started out talking to us this evening, you talked about waking up in a panic about all these thoughts going through your mind of, you know, all these depressive panicking, the bills,
yeah,
and is dying. And that is the unquiet mind, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It really is. But I want to tell you something else that many people might or might not know, that we have some very famous men and women in our history who suffered from bipolar or major depression. I'll name a few. Abraham Lincoln, for example. In those days, they called it melancholia. Winston Churchill, the hero of World War II, he suffered from major depression. He called it the dog that bites at your heels. We all know Virginia Woolf. She committed suicide. Vincent van Gogh, great painter, he suffered from manic depression. And on and on, it goes on and on. I wrote a piece called Normals Overrated. Are You Normal? When the Lines Blur. I could read part of that if you want.
Oh, please.
Okay. Well, I already said the names. We shout out all the names of those famous people. And then we play a song from another thing which I recommend is that Broadway show Next to Normal, which is about, it won the Pulitzer Prize Best Musical of the Year. It's a rock opera, beautifully done. I've seen it already. I could give people information on how they can get cheap tickets. It's on Broadway now. Winner of a lot of Tony Awards. It's called Next to Normal. Did anybody ever hear of it?
No, I'm putting all the stuff in the chat room. And we have a chat room, Joel, where there's people listening, and I'm just putting this stuff up there. So
yeah.
Tom and I plan to go to New York sometime soon, so that would be something I would like to see.
I could give you the code to use so you don't have to spend $100. I went to see it, and it was only $40 for a ticket, which is cheap for New York. And it's a brilliant show. The actress who plays the bipolar mother won the Tony Award for Best Actress of the Year. It's a rock musical. It's all about being bipolar or manic depressed. After the show, people who have that bipolar disorder or even who don't have it come up to the actors and thank them for bringing it into the public eye. It's about time. The stigma has to be changed. And I already have seen it, and I'm seeing it again. And so maybe when you and Tom come, we could all meet in New York.
Oh, my gosh, that would be so much fun.
Yes, it's going to be playing right through the middle of January, I think. It's probably past that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can give you some facts about mental illness.
Okay.
Mental illness can range from a minor emotional disturbance to severe chronic illness. Mental illness is as real an illness as cancer, heart disease, or diabetes. And then recovery from mental illness is possible. My case, for example, but a lot of people don't recover it. Now there's some myths about mental illness, such as mental illness is a weakness or defect in character. Persons diagnosed with mental illness can simply get better by, get this, pulling themselves up by the bootstraps. I heard that one. there is no hope for recovery from mental illness. Well, for some people that's true, but it wasn't for me, thank God. Then another thing, to be human is to be depressed, the continuum. To be human is to be depressed, sad, upset some of the time. There's a line. Who draws the line? Suffering is universal. Mental illness is still stigmatized. Come out, whoever you are. I wrote mm-hmm. this piece. Everyone is a little nuts. We just, for the most, would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone is a little nuts.
And if you're not, then you're nuts.
What's that?
If you're not a little nuts, then you are a little nuts.
Exactly. Everyone in this crazy world would, well, I won't go into politics right now, but you know who I'm talking about. Everyone is a little nuts. We just, for the most part, won't acknowledge it. We just aren't willing to accept it. Oh, no, not me. She or he is nuts. Now, mm-hmm. I belong to a group called the Mental Health Players. It's a group here in Montclair run by a woman who's been doing it for 20 years. And what we do is we go to hospitals and other places to educate people, make them aware of various mental illnesses, to fight stigma. We do, you know, I'm into acting, Kate. You've always known that.
So we do
dramatized skits associated with mental illness, and usually I get to play the depressed person. But it's acting now.
Yeah, it is acting now. Isn't that beautiful?
It brings awareness, and I have fun doing it, and we stay in character, and it's acting again, and then at the end we can share our stories if we want. Sometimes I share that I suffer from mental illness myself. Sometimes I just talk about, you know, teaching it fairly and being a drama therapist and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. You want more?
Well, you know, it just seems to me that a lot of people have been touched deeply by psychiatric disorders and their families, their husbands, people who have lost beloved people through suicide, everybody's touched by it, and people in the past who have been pioneers in bringing mental health issues to out of the closet, as it were, would be
right.
Rosalind Carter is one, and
she
was really big on it, really huge on it, yeah.
That
yes,
was Charlie Pell, Kate, you remember? You don't follow football, but one of the big Clemson football coaches was a dear friend of our family, and he was on 60 Minutes one night talking about his battle with depression. He was quite ill. Charlie Pell. P-E-L-L.
P-E-L-L. P-E-L-L. Well, I recommend another book that is really great. Another book that interviews people like Joan Rivers and others who have suffered from depression when she lost her husband. Let me see if I can get this book. It's a great book. It's by Kathy Cronkite. Did you ever hear of Kathy Cronkite?
Yeah.
I think she's Walter's daughter or granddaughter or something.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can find it, but it's really good. I read it through, and it's amazing how many people... Well-known people. Jules Pfeiffer went through a depression. It's called Kathy Cronkite on the Edge of Darkness, Conversations about Conquering Depression. You can get it through Amazon.com, and the list goes on.
You do know that this depression business is a sign of intelligence, don't you? I mean, you think about it. People who you know who have been depressed are not people that are run-of-the-mill. They're bright people.
No, I would say Abraham Lincoln's not run-of-the-mill.
Right.
No, that's
they're right. Bright. Bright. Our brightest and our most intelligent struggle
But the media still portrays mentally ill people as murderers and killers and... You see it on the TV all the time, you know, and it's
Hopefully we're moving away from that some.
Well, let me just let me bring in something I think is true, is that I think everybody has been depressed at one time or another.
Sure.
I don't see how, I think everybody suffers from depression at one time or another. I know I have.
Sure.
Right.
And not to admit it is crazy.
Yeah.
No, you're right, but, you know, there is a difference between getting the blues and feeling sad and feeling down and being really clinically depressed where you need medication, and that's a whole other ball game.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
You know,
well, it's what
is,
I call, Joel, I struggled with it, too, and a long time ago, and I always called it being in the dark.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference
a
between being sad and being in the dark.
That's very true. I totally agree with you. By the way, Joan, where
yes.
I love your accent. Where are you from?
I'm in South Carolina. Can you tell?
I could tell. I love it.
We had Kate. Kate came to see us. We tried to make
what?
A southerner out of her.
Out of who?
Kate.
She's not a southerner. She's a Lancasterian.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I went down and actually blended very well with the southern people.
Yes,
when I went,
yes she did. She did a great job. They all loved her. They all adopted her. It was a family reunion. They were ready to just adopt her, keep her.
No, I know. I go way back with Kate. We walked the streets of San Francisco with my dog Sweetheart. Isn't that?
Oh
nice?
My gosh, we had fun.
Oh, we did.
Well,
we
go back to 1962 or 1963, I'd say.
Wow.
Yes, we do. When you
which
were,
is when we
should,
met.
Should I tell them what your mother said, or is that not good?
Please do, because I did not tell Joan this, and I think this is hysterical. Go ahead.
Well, I was teaching at Ames, Iowa in 1963, and I came east because Kate's brother, his name wasn't Delaney at that time, but anyway, he was marrying, we were all at Lehigh University, and he was marrying, she's Jolla now, but she was Camille Boda then. Anyway, I came east, and Kate, I think, was about 12 or 13 years old at the time, and a little shyer than she is now, but I met her mother. What a treat that was. And the first thing Kate's mother says to me is, could you believe this? What do you think of nuclear war?
I can believe that.
Well, what do you think of nuclear bombs or something? And I was dumbstruck. I had never met anybody. The first thing off the top of the head is, what do you think of this? So I didn't know what to say. I guess I said, I'm against this. But that was a trip. I was coming to your brother's wedding and John's wedding, and there I meet your mother with that crazy question.
who, by the way, suffered, I'd say, from major depression the last year
did?
Of her. Yeah, and the last year of her life, she was so majorly depressed that she set herself up for, and I think this is another little point we can say about depression, she set herself up for major illness. She was so depressed, she had a stroke, and she died 2 months later. And I
right.
swear, she set her whole system, her whole, you know, psychic system or bodily system, her mind, body, and spirit up for this eventual passing, which, you know, not to bring, not, she was just... I just think that major depression is more prevalent than we think.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think that, Kate, you're talking about this. I think I've talked about this with your brother and sister-in-law, with John and Delaney. They've mentioned that about your mother. And also, if I can say, but I don't know if I should get into this because it's so personal, you know, about your father.
Yeah.
And I could talk
Go
about
ahead.
My father.
Please,
well,
please.
Well,
yeah.
As far as I know, Delaney has told me about this, that after your mother died, your father really went into deep depression.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, when he had colon cancer, I guess you could call that clinical depression too. He told my mother one night, this was 1968 when he got colon cancer, he told my mother, why don't you just shoot me? I can't stand the pain anymore. Because in those days, in 68, there wasn't the type of stuff that they have for colon cancer that they have now. It was awful to watch him die. I'm sure he was depressed.
And the same is true of the medicines and the treatments and the therapies they have for major depression. They didn't have that in 1968, nor did they have those treatments for depression when my mother was depressed in 1987.
No, they didn't. Then
again, as Joan knows, and we've discussed this, certain medications are really hard for people to take. You know, they make them crazier than what they already are.
I know. There's always that. I have friends who do. Finding the right cocktail, as they call it these days. I mean, there's so, now nowadays it's gone to the opposite extreme, I think. There's so many medicines out there, and the drug companies are pushing their medicines, and psychiatrists, they listen to the drug companies, and you see all these ads on TV, try this, try that. Of course, when they list the side effects, who the hell wants to take those medications?
Mm-hmm.
The side effects
mm-hmm.
are worse than what's the depression. Which, I mean, I lucked out. I'll tell you, the only thing I'm on, and it's more for sleep than depression, is trazodone. It helps me sleep. But I was on Abilify, which cost me a lot of money. I was on Wellbutrin. I was on Effexa. I was on Paxil. I was on you name it. And none of these medicines really helped.
Yeah. And
well,
you say you've gotten it down. You've gotten the medicines down to just a few, or?
No, just trazodone for sleep.
Just one. Just one. Wow.
Just
cool.
One. Of course, I take a lot of other medications, like for my... Lavaza for fish oil and aspirin, and you know I'm an old man, so I take I think your brother probably takes some of those too. Lavaza. What do I take for heart? Norvasc for high blood pressure, and all the other things you gotta take when you get older. But as far as depression goes, I really don't take anything. Just the trazodone for sleep. And eventually, Dr. Liebhaus, my psychiatrist, wants to take me off the trazodone, which sleep without it.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of natural ways to sleep without any drug at all. And we have a friend Trapper Sherwood, who is so deeply into teaching people how to sleep without medicine. He's very good. But the thing is, when I first talked to you when you got out of your institution, I remember you saying that you were on lots and lots more drugs than you are now for depression.
Oh, yes, I was. I was on a lot more. And I also will mention this, and, you know, for some people it really works, and my psychiatrist, Dr. Liebhauser, and I talk about this. I had ECT too, not the old kind where they don't give you an anesthesia. I had the new kind where they give you anesthesia, and I hated it because the anesthesia, when you go and you feel like, my experience with ECT is when you have the anesthesia, you feel like you're drowning, but apparently it's supposed to help. It's no longer like one flew over the cuckoo's nest. It's much different now. And maybe that helped me, and maybe it didn't. My psychiatrist, all I know is I haven't taken it for the last year and a half.
And that's electric shock therapy?
ECT it's called, or ECT. And if you want to see a movie, another movie about something like that, it won an Academy Award, it's called, what is it called? You know, the one with Russell Crowe, the true story.
Oh, yeah. A Beautiful Mind.
A Beautiful Mind. Beautiful movie.
Yes.
He's got suffered from schizophrenia, and they gave him ECT. But he was a brilliant professor at, I think, Princeton University.
Yeah, that was a wonderful movie.
Yes, it was.
Joan, did you see that, Joan?
I think I did. I'm trying to...
Russell Crowe.
No, I did not. The one I keep thinking about is the one that Marlo Thomas was in. What was that? That was years ago, and she was institutionalized and didn't need to be for years,
really?
Years and years and years, and it's her story about all that. She was misdiagnosed.
I'll look that up. Well, another one, talking about movies, another one is Girl Interrupted with Angelina Jolie and Winona Ryder. That was also about being institutionalized. Remember that one?
Well, that's a tremendous movie. I can't say I enjoyed it very much, but
no.
it was a great movie.
Yeah,
and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is probably the very best of all of
It's classic.
It is classic, but I tell you, another thing we're doing besides this book thing, where each month we're doing a different book, like, you know, An Unquiet Mind and Darkness Visible. We're doing a film thing every month. We're going to show a different film, and there's some great films about mentally ill people. One is called, it's a classic, King of Hearts with Alan Bates.
That was my favorite. I love that movie.
I just rented it recently, and basically what it's showing is it's an anti-war movie, World War I, and it's showing how the people in the institution are more sane than the ones that are running the war.
Well, as you can imagine, my mother loved that movie, and I must have seen it 20 times.
Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah.
Alan Bates,
yeah.
Yeah, and he ends up going, he chooses the institution at the end. He'd rather be in the institution with the so-called nuts than be on the outside world with the real nuts.
I'll tell you what, that is one of the best movies ever made.
Yes, it
totally.
Is. Totally.
It's delightful. It has tremendous truth to it. You know,
guy's,
I think he's trying to basically escape from the war because it's so hideous.
Right.
And he gets
into
the institution, and they sort of, you know, having so much fun with all these these people dancing, and they're all, you know, they might be insane, but actually they remind me of my friends and myself.
Me too. Yeah, the music is wonderful. Genevieve Bujold plays one of the actresses in it, and she's just terrific. And they make Alan Bates the King of Hearts. The King of Hearts is here.
Oh, listen, here's a question in the chat room. Our friend Steve is there. Joan, of course, you're there too. How much does what a person does for a living contribute to depression?
Really? Dentists have a high suicide rate.
Yes, they do. You're right. Dentists have... The highest suicide rate of any profession. So your work, sure, your work could drive you nuts. I mean, I go into New York City sometimes and I see these people running from work and running home, and they look like they're going to have a heart attack any minute now.
Yeah. Who wants to live that way?
Exactly. Who wants to live
that way? Apparently several million people.
Not on my list.
Not on my list either. I mean, I watch the people in New York City sometimes, and I guess maybe this is true of all cities and big cities in the world, but they're running around like they're on high anxiety.
Yeah.
And I guess they are.
What?
That's not the way.
I think they are.
And somehow, I'm a senior myself. It's like we've raised this generation of young people who want to live that way. I want my porch swing.
I will come to South Carolina and sit on the porch with you.
Yeah, come sit on my back deck and we'll sit on the swing and do absolutely nothing, you know?
See, I used to live in New York before I moved to San Francisco back in 1979. I don't know if Kate was ever at my apartment. That's where I had Sweetheart when I put Sweetheart with my dog. That Kate knows very intimately.
Yes. May I make one real quick statement? Sweetheart, Joan, was Boopy's daughter.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Anyway, I did live in New York and back in 79. It was not as crazy as it is now. It's totally nuts and so expensive. And give me that swing in South Carolina any day.
I went there in 1968. I went to New York City. And I saw it, and then I came home, and I haven't been back.
Well, come to see, just come make, try to make a trip, and you can look me up. Come and see, try to see that show Next to Normal. It's really worth it, just to see what, I tell everybody, it ain't Mary Poppins, you know.
Yeah.
We've come a long way with showing what's what, and it's a landmark play, and it won the Pulitzer Prize, and I don't know if you want to.
Oh, it sounds wonderful.
We are learning, I think, don't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think we've made progress.
Oh, yes, I do. But there's still progress to be made because when the media shows, the media still shows a lot of people who are mentally ill, who commit crimes and murders, and it still gives a bad name. But you're right. I agree that we have made some progress. Next to Normal never would have been a play 10 years ago, for example.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
So
I was thinking how life has changed because when I was depressed, I was in my early 30s, which was a very long time ago. But the counseling center was in my church.
Oh.
Still parked in a public parking lot so nobody would see where you were going.
Really?
Oh,
you didn't ever dare admit that's what you were. You know, it was just not socially acceptable. Now people will say openly, you know, well, I'm seeing a counselor and it's so-and-so. You know, it's real open in this day, which I think is a good thing because everybody I know needs a counselor at some point or another. I have yet to meet a human being who could not be helped by talking something through.
Now, can I ask you something, Joan? How did you deal with your depression?
Long-term psychotherapy. Tried every med in the world and nothing worked. Couldn't take them.
But
finally got there. Finally got there. I don't even know how to say. There was no great big. It was a long process. How about that?
Yes.
It was a very long process. There was no great big, hello, today I'm well. It was more gradual than that. But,
I could totally relate. Go ahead.
But a very long, just a very long process, and I'm talking about years and years and years, not weeks, you know. It becomes a lifestyle, you know, learning how to deal with it and how to cope and how to function with this dark cloud. I remember one day, and you would understand this, and probably very few of our listeners would, but I can remember going to a PTO meeting with one of the children and walking down the hall without effort.
I
thought, this is how people function.
Right.
I didn't realize I was trying so hard.
Right.
I was totally shocked. I mean, I was just walking. I thought, oh, wow. This is easy. I can do this.
Right.
Where two or three years before it would have been, I don't know how I'm going to get from one end to the other of this hall, but I will do it one step at a time.
I could totally relate. I mean, for example, it's beautiful up here now. It's fall, the leaves are changing, and it's beautiful. 3 years ago, it became fall. Excuse the language, I didn't give a shit. I mean, I couldn't appreciate it. I couldn't. Beauty was not. It was just like, how can anything be beautiful when I was feeling so hopeless?
Right.
So I know exactly what you're talking about.
The other one that I remember, while we're giving examples here, and we don't need to be a depressed show, but I think people need to know, I was mad at the trees, and it was interesting you mentioned the trees. But I would cry because the trees were growing.
Really?
They were living life and I wasn't.
Oh, yeah. That's
and I couldn't get from where I was to where they were. And they weren't putting any effort either. I cried all the way to work and all the way home for over a year. And I didn't know anybody noticed, and one of the kids' principals told me later. He said, I used to watch you and pray for you every single morning. He said, because you'd be going down that road crying. I said, I did it every day. Did it every day.
Yeah. Well, sure. At least so, Joan, I couldn't even work for 15 years. I couldn't.
Yeah. And I hear that, and I understand that. I think I was close.
Yeah.
And I think, too, had I not walked into the exact counseling center and the exact counseling center I walked into, story would be very different. And I'm very thankful.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, we're lucky, Joe. We got the right help along the way.
Right.
I mean, William Styron in his book, Darkness Visible, talks about basically how going into the hospital saved him.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there that I feel, and it sounds like you feel, very blessed. There's a lot of people out there that remain in institutions for their whole life.
Sure.
They don't get better. There's a lot of those, and it's very sad.
When my daughter got married, our daughter got married some years back, and
yes.
I wrote to every member of my team. And you've got to remember, these people were around when my children were little.
Yes.
But I wrote them all a note, and I said, I want you to come to this wedding, and I want you to celebrate what you helped make happen.
Right.
My children's lives would have been very different without that team in mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And the frightening thing to me is the lack of real qualified help out there. You know, it's a nightmare. I mean, you walk in the wrong office, and you can hang it up, you know.
No, you're right. Yeah.
I don't mean any disrespect, but, oh, there are a lot of kooks in this field, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
I can make it worse.
I know, exactly. I hear stories all the time. I go to this group called the Comfort Zone. Very wonderful group every Friday afternoon with people who have suffered from depression or bipolar. Sometimes we talk about the clinicians that are taking care of us, and they're nuttier than we are.
Oh, yeah. And the experimenters, the ones that try every pill coming, I mean, I'm telling you, and I put on a lot of weight when they tried all those medications, but like after a while I started to think, don't try another thing on me, you know. Heaven only knows what it did to my body. My metabolism has been off forever, and it's a wonderful excuse for being so fat. But for real, they do. I mean, it's like, oh, well, that didn't work. Let's do this.
Exactly.
And I think your body just rebels after a while.
You're right. No, I have a lot of friends that, now, I have the opposite problem. Kate knows this. I took medication, you know, for a long time. I don't take it anymore, but instead of putting weight on me, I lost weight.
Oh, did you?
Oh, boy. And he's skinny to begin with.
Yeah, I was skinny to begin with. Well, I didn't lose that much, but I did lose. But I was eating and eating and eating and taking medications, and other people were getting fat. I remained thin.
Oh, well, I think they haven't studied this stuff enough to know. We haven't been 50 years away from a lot of these meds yet.
No, we haven't.
We don't know what, as I said, I gave up on all of that. I'd never found one that would work, that didn't just make me feel like I'm crazier than I already was.
I
don't need this. I had to function. I had two children.
Sure.
And I had to function, you know. I had to function, and I would say, if you give me something and I cannot function, I am coming off of it. If I slept time, it had to go, you know.
Yeah. Can I ask you something, Joe?
Sure.
How did your children deal with it?
They really don't. I've asked them what they remember, you know.
Yeah.
They have happy memories. I don't know if they blocked it all out or what. I remember when my daughter was first grade, she came home with a story she had drawn of her family, and I cried because her mommy was on the couch. laying down on the couch, you know. And I wept. I just wept. But they don't seem to be, they seem to be well balanced. Don't you think, Kate? I mean, they tell me they had a happy childhood. I said, honey, you don't know the half of it. but they did. Well, they were loved. They knew they were loved.
Oh,
I don't think they ever had any doubt about that. I don't know. They managed somehow. Now, their father is fabulous.
Well, that's good.
And I
think, so are you.
Well, but I wasn't, Kate. For a long time, I was. I'm not fabulous now, but, I mean, I really was not present. I'd even bought groceries back in those days. I didn't go in a grocery store one year at all.
If I had money, I'd pay for your trip up here. You definitely have to see Next to Normal because it's all about how this woman, bipolar woman, deals, how her family deals with it. And it's brilliant. And how her husband deals with it, how her kids deal with it. It's your story, in a way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Neat.
Oh,
well,
my plan,
I've got to come up and see Kate at some point. Because I want to meet, I just drew a blank. I want to meet Joanne and
Sheila.
God, where was that?
Who the hell was that?
Joanne's the astrologer that comes on the show. She's one of Kitty Schenck's old friends.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
She's just a delightful lady. I mean, she is total delight. She's just total just joy. And,
she comes. It's Sheila. The astrologer comes on the show once a month, and Joanne is my mother, one of my mother's oldest friends, and she is a Unitarian minister.
Well, I'd love to meet her myself because
you would totally enjoy them. They are precious.
Oh my gosh!
They are
so
dear.
Do I have to come to Lancaster? Is that it?
Yeah. Isn't that where they are, Kate? Don't they live there in Lancaster?
They do.
Well,
anyway, I've told them I'm coming up. So next year I'm going to do that. But it won't be this week. But that is in my list. Things I want to do. I'm forward.
Well, but you got to come. Then we got to meet in New York, and you got to come see that show Next to Normal.
I cannot imagine me in New York, but hey, you know, she couldn't imagine herself in South Carolina either. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm not promising anything. I won't be driving a car.
Well, you can buy the album is out. You can buy the album for Next to Normal. You can buy the CD and listen to
it. Oh, really?
Yeah,
I may very well do that.
You know, it's only like $18, but it's called Next to Normal, and it's all the music, and they give you the whole script when they give you the CD, so you could do that.
Yeah, that has
possibilities. Well, that sounds really worth it. Very worthwhile.
Yeah, sounds like something I need to see.
Yes.
And I know some other folks that need to see it, too.
So, you know, it seems to me that when, I know for myself, I have certain things that I have to do every day to remain sane.
like
meditation, and then I write prayers. I think we were mentioning, I think people, I had this prayer blog challenge where I wrote 365 prayers, and it just ended on the 31st of October. So people say to me, well, now that you're finished with that, you know, you must be stopping writing prayers. But those prayers have been, in a way, as important to me as meditation. And it's when things are kind of tough in life, or you know, challenges arise, the prayers and the meditation and other spiritual practices really help me to remain level, calm.
Yes. You know what I'm doing now, and Kate, you knew Tim, and I'd like to read a scene. I'm writing a play about our relationship together, and it's so therapeutic, and it's so much fun. I mean, he's no longer around, of course. He's probably laughing his head off in heaven or wherever. But can I read some of his play to you?
Oh,
don't
please do. Yeah.
Okay, about a month after I met Tim, he came from San Luis Obispo, which is south of San Francisco. And we go to this wedding in San Luis. He takes me to a wedding in San Luis Obispo after I had met him for a month. So can I read a little bit? When I'm writing it, I'm laughing my head off, but this really happened.
Go ahead.
Joel and Tim are with wedding guests. Tim is dressed in a light flow. You remember Tim, don't you, Kate?
I do.
Tim is dressed in a light flowing pants with a bright red shirt. Joel is dressed more conservatively. Joel says, "That was a beautiful wedding ceremony. They seem real suited to each other, a nice, beautiful couple." Then Tim says, "What did you think of the priest? Isn't he cute?" Joel says, "Yeah, but not as cute as you." Tim says, "Yeah, right. Anyway, I'm going to mingle with the guests," because he loved to mingle with guests. Joel says, "There you go, acting like you were the bride. Go ahead, do your thing. I'll just sit here with these other guys and watch them talk to others." Okay, then Tim says to me, "Okay, you'll be all right?" And I say, yeah, I'll just watch you, and then we can dance together. Tim says, "Sounds good to me. Oh, hi, Betty, let me pour you some champagne." He actually did this. Betty says, "Thanks, who are you?" Tim says, "I'm Tim, Melissa and Tom's friend. That's who got married. This is my friend Joel, we just recently met." The guest says, "Hi, you have a nice guy here, Tim, a good catch." They all laugh. Tim says, "Oh, there goes Jack. Let me pour him some champagne. Hey, Jack." Jack says, "Hey, Tim, come here. Let me introduce you to some people." Tim says, "Okay, sure it'll be okay, Joel?" Joel says, "Oh, of course. Don't worry. I'll mingle. You go mingle with these people a little bit more." As I'm writing this, it's just like you're doing the prayers, Kate. Tim continues to make small talk with wedding guests, flirting here and there, pouring champagne, having fun. The person sitting next to Joel, I named him Frankie. Frankie is that your boyfriend? Frankie says, "He sure seems to know how to have fun. How long have you two known each other?" Joel says, "Oh, about 4 months. He's like that a lot. Seems to make friends easily. That's one of the things I like about him." Frankie says, "You seem quiet and more subdued." "Well, I am, although I have my moments too. I can be outgoing too, but usually not with strangers." Frankie says, "How did you two meet?" Joel says, "You probably remember this, Kate." Joel says, "In a restaurant in San Francisco. I'm a waiter there while going to graduate school. Tim walked in one night with a mutual friend, Michael Joe." Frankie says, "Was it love at first sight?" Joel says, "I don't know about Tim, but it was for me. When he walked in, I saw a white light coming from his head, I swear to God. And I knew he was it." Frankie says, "Are you religious?" Joel's laughing. "Oh, no. It's just that is what I saw. It probably was just the reflection of a car coming down the street. But there definitely was a white light. Did I ever tell you that, Kate?"
No, that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, Frankie says, "Are you saying you two are soulmates?" Joel's laughing. "Well, maybe we are. Yes, I think we are, but who knows? We only know each other a few months, but there definitely is something special about him and our relationship, which you know about, Kate."
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost done. Frankie says, What do you mean? Joel says, "Well, we laugh a lot, just like Republicans. Are in similar field. Tim is a forensic social worker, works with quote-unquote crazy criminals, and I'm studying to be a drama therapist. We like movies, plays, operas. Neither of us smoke, and look at this. And we have good sex most of the time." Frankie says, my, that does sound like a lot in common. Good luck to you guys. I hope your relationship lasts." Joel says, "Thanks, me too. We'll see. All I know is that Tim is someone special, and I've never felt this way about anyone before. Do you have a boyfriend? Frankie says, I did for about 8 months, but it didn't work out. Joel says, I'm sorry. Maybe the next one will. Don't give up. Keep looking. Oh, it's almost done. Frankie says, oh, I am. There are many fish in the sea, so to speak, and I'm bound to run into the right fish. Joel says, I hope so. Maybe somebody here, you never know. You were sitting here talking to me, and all of a sudden he appears, and then you have the white light. They both laugh. In unison, they raise their glass of champagne. Here's to the white light. Frankie says, I have to get going. Joel says, nice talking to you. See you around. If you come up to San Francisco, give me a call. Here's my number, and I can introduce you to a friend. I think you two would hit it off. Frankie says, this really, okay, I'm embellishing here. This, it could have happened. Frankie says, what are you, a matchmaker? No, I just like to see people happy. It's part of my job as a therapist, helping people to find their happiness. But of course, it takes work. Frankie says, you're very interesting, a therapist. Maybe I can come and see you. I'm having some problems. Joel says, well, give me a call and we will go from there. Frankie says, okay, nice meeting you. And again, good luck with Tim. See you. Joel says, bye. Frankie exits. Joel continues to watch Tim interacting with the guests. Then it goes on with Tim and Joel. What do you think?
I'd say, here's to the white light.
Well, when I finish this whole play, I'm going to send it to Joel and Delaney. I'll send you a copy, too.
Yeah, send me a copy, too.
Maybe
and Thomas, you know, quite the drama guy. He taught drama. My husband Thomas taught drama for many years. He himself was on the stage quite a bit.
He has
quite a great sense of balance, and he understands. He actually was an English major in college, and you know he reads quite prolifically. He is very good, so he'd love to read it too.
Oh yeah, maybe he could even be in it. He could play me or something.
Yeah.
Yes, he could be in it.
Well, exactly.
Jala and Delaney want to be in it too.
We should do it on Second Life. Get us all together.
Never mind Second Life. It's going to go to Broadway. I'm going to win the Pulitzer Prize.
Go to Broadway, yes.
That's right. That's
y'all
exactly
can be on
right.
Oprah. The case had to be on Oprah anyway, so everybody can just be on Oprah together.
Well, I forgot that about Tom, that he was, because my first master's degree was in English Lit. That's how I met your brother.
Yes, I know.
It's amazing. I mean, they thought I was Lazarus, too.
I know, that was even before you did Rise from the Dead.
Your brother and sister-in-law have been I've known them longer than anybody I've ever known. I mean, we went to Europe and we danced on the beach naked in Europe. Didn't they tell you that story?
When you guys went to Europe, you were very, very stodgy, all of you. And when you came back, yeah, it was like stodgy and serious. And when you came back, you were three different, completely different people. So maybe it was dancing naked on the beach.
That's what I'm thinking, that dance took care of that.
We did that. It was in Nice, France. And the Riviera, we danced naked on the beach. Could you imagine John and this last Catholic girl?
I know. That was the beginning of... That was the beginning of her renaissance, I think.
You said it. Then we went to Italy. We met her relatives, and they said, how come your brother and sister-in-law had just recently married, and her relatives, her Italian relatives, were wondering, how come they don't have bambinos yet? And it was so funny. I can still remember that scene in there. How come they don't have bambinos yet? You know what they said?
No.
We studied too hard.
Well, yeah. Yeah, then they got a lot of dogs, and that was the rest is history.
You said they moved to Funky Farm, but we won't go into that now.
No, there's not enough time. We only have 5 seconds left on the show.
So what do you want me to say? What?
I just want to say thank you for coming very much.
Absolutely.
We enjoyed it.
What fun.
Yeah.
Enjoy meeting you.
We'll have you back.
Please do, and I hope people gain some knowledge about depression and all that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, the fact is that you give people hope.
Yes, you don't have to remain depressed. You can get help, and you can there's help out there, and if you're lucky, you get better.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You take care of yourself, too, Joel.
Oh, you too. And I remember when I went to Houston, Texas, and I taught one time in Houston, Texas, English to black kids who needed to bone up on their English. And they said to me, I don't think they say it in South, y'all come back now.
That's right, y'all come back now. You hear? That's what you hear on the end of that. Y'all come back now, you hear?
You hear?
Or my mama,
education,
black strings out and the dog's tied up. Come on by.
I love it.
Well, love to you. Love to all.
Nice.
I'm gonna play music for mother and child, and Joel, I'll talk to you soon.
And do I get a copy of this conversation somehow?
We'll work on that.
Yeah, let's work on that. I'd love to have a copy.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to play this. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.